Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
So thanks for coming out tonight. This is Denver, right? Which means this is Thursday. Is it Thursday? Excellent. Wow, it's a nice night here. I thought it would be like 6 feet of snow, but that's not really the way it is here, is it? That's other parts of Colorado. Yeah, I know. I flew over those parts today. There was a lot of snow in other parts of the state. Anyway, thanks for coming. Hopefully a few of you have gotten your own copies of Good Eats 3, the later years. You got that? I see a few copies. Good. This does represent all but the very last three episodes of Good Eats, because we've put it out to pasture. There will be no more Good Eats. 13 years. It's long enough. I always wanted to quit right before I got fired, and I figured the day must be coming. You know, you can't make it that many years and stay in the groove. But there are still three episodes. Well, no, there was a barbecue special, and there's also going to be a new Thanksgiving special and a dark chocolate special that'll probably... It's like the porn of the Foon world. Yeah, it's crazy. Dark chocolate. That'll probably come out around Valentine's Day, because that's usually when dark chocolate shows come out. Anyway, so those three shows are not included in this book, but every other episode is. All the half-hour episodes, this finishes out the set. How many of you have either Good Eats 1 or Good Eats 2? Hopefully you've cooked from those books, and you may have recognized the fact that the applications were completely rebuilt from scratch. We one of the reasons that we waited 10 years to start making Good Eats books is we wanted to get feedback from people about how things were going, how they were working. Unfortunately, most people were making the recipes, or applications as we call them, from the internet printout version, which is by its very nature crappy. Short and not as thorough as it really kind of ought to be. So what we did is we paid attention to what people said about the experiences that they had. Sorry, I'm just looking. Water. Sorry, I wanted water. We paid attention to what people said and what kind of results people had, and then we went back and we tore down the applications, rebuilt them from scratch, and put them back together. So if you're a fan of the show, you'll recognize dishes, but you'll probably not recognize these applications, because writing a recipe or an application for a book is very, very different than making it for a TV show. So hopefully you'll have 100% success. We believe that we've gotten it up to 99% success. We can't get to 100% because 1% of the population are morons. And there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. Like, for instance, the woman in California who several years ago saw a show that we made in season 4 called Where There's Smoke, There's Fish. You may have seen that episode. In that, we smoked a salmon in a cardboard box. With delicious results, I might add. Well, this lady decided that she was also going to smoke a salmon in a cardboard box, only she decided to use charcoal, and she did it in her apartment. I can't help her other than to suggest she not have children. Because I just don't know that that needs to be out in the gene pool. But otherwise, I'm hoping that you'll have 100% success with the applications in the book. And it's certainly the best of the three books, because the shows were better. As we went further into the run of the show, we got better at it. And I think the food got better, the information got better, and hopefully that has been encapsulated in this 428 pages. At least I think it's 428 pages. Is it? They sent me one copy of this book before I went on tour, so I haven't spent a lot of time with it since I wrote it, unfortunately. Like, how many copies do I get? One. Great. And my wife's already sold it on eBay to my mom. There, I'm going to make this safe yet. So I one of the things that I wanted to do today, I haven't been back to Denver since. Did anybody come to the signing when I was here last time? Because I'm trying to remember which book it was. I don't think it was my first book. I don't think it was I'm Just Here for the Food. It may have been I'm Just Here for More Food or Gear. I don't know. But I mean, I definitely was here. But the years tend to kind of pile up. And so this year I finally said, I want to go back to Denver. And they were like, okay. But you know, but this is a New York publishing company, so they don't believe anybody here reads, you know, so like Denver, that's Colorado. They're all skiing. They're not going to come. Yeah, I know. They never leave New York. Thing about working with New Yorkers is typically they don't go anywhere because they assume that the rest of the country is populated with zombies. And since handgun laws are so prohibitive in New York, they're not really ready for zombies. So they stay on the island and, you know, maybe go into Brooklyn on a sunny day. But other than that, they stay in Manhattan and they were, you know, the rest of the country's, you know, morons. So anyway, I wanted to spend some time before we sign a bunch of stuff answering questions that you guys might have or having kind of a conversation. I'll talk about food. I'll talk about TV. I'll talk about stuff I don't know anything about. And in fact, those are some of my best discussions, the things I just have absolutely no clue about. So all I ask is that if you've got a question, raise your hand and stand up if I call on you so I'll know what's going on. We'll start with you, ma'am, because you're already standing up. So just shout, yeah, you. Oh, my God. So, go ahead. I'm listening.
What's your favorite movie?
What's my favorite movie? Jaws. Followed by Casablanca. And they're both buddy films. The way I look at it. Only one of them's got a shark and the other one has Ingrid Bergman. Just as dangerous. So yes, Jaws, absolutely. Which is why, if you go back through Good Eats episodes, you'll find there are exactly 74 Jaws references over the 250 shows. Yes, sir. Okay. Up. Thank you.
I'm going to be submitting my audition tape for the next Food Network.
You're sending your audition tape in for Food Network Star.
Yep, and do you have any advice on how to get noticed in your industry?
How to get noticed in the industry?
Yes.
Well, the best thing to do is to be own a pawn shop. Hoard, breed prodigiously, be a midget, and catch catfish with your bare hands. If you want a shot at network television, that's the very best thing you can do. You probably don't, I don't know that you want to be on Food Network Star. Because it's going to get, next season's going to be mercilessly difficult. That's because I'm going to be in all 11 episodes. And my goal is to make everybody cry. Because I don't want anybody to be another Food Network star. I just don't. I want to nip it in the bud. So I'm gonna work towards that. Yes, ma'am.
Oh my gosh, you just made my day. Okay.
Stand up. Deep breath. Speak.
I have watched your show since 99, and I'm a huge fan.
You watched the show since 99. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
And my husband said you can be my hall pet.
I don't know what that means. So who's his hall pass?
Whoever he wants.
And who did he pick?
He hasn't picked it.
He hasn't picked yet.
But
that doesn't seem right, does it? I've got Giada De Laurentiis' phone number. It's in my phone. I left it in the hotel. Clearly a conversation for another time. Sit down. You, sir, and if you say the same thing she did, I'm leaving. Go ahead.
When you do all your hosting for Iron Chef, are you doing all that talking as it's going on? When you go back?
Am I doing all the talking that while it's going on Iron Chef America? Here's the way it's done. I see 8 cameras at a time during Iron Chef America, during any battle. There are 13 cameras. So there's a fair number of cameras that I can't know what it is they're seeing. So once the show is edited together, I go back and I add stuff for those cameras. And it's usually fairly minimal, you know? I mean, it's not a whole bunch. But there's no way for me to sew up all the story because I can't see it. I can only watch eight at a time. And I'm getting a feed from a food culinary producer who's helping me to know everything that's going on at different times in different places. But I don't think that I could make it really, really hold together and try to get a one-hour battle down into the 41-minute envelope that it has to be in without going back once the edit's done. So I do some voiceover work, but I would say that on average, 65% of the track is the original material. And they're thinking about releasing kind of DVD versions that are just the raw tracks, complete with cussing and very off-collar jokes. Very bad jokes. Because sometimes I say stuff that's... I mean, it's a long run, and I can only be expected to be good for so long. The lady with the fro. Who's my favorite Iron Chef? Oh, no, no, no. No, each of the Iron Chefs are precious snowflakes. Unique, caring individuals, all equally talented, all exactly... What? You're heckling now. Actually, you know what? Bobby Flay's one of the nicest guys on Food Network. Matter of fact, when I started on the network in 1999, he's the only guy that would really give me the time of day. Well, he and Mario Batali. Everybody else was real snooty. Well, Giada wasn't there in 99. Giada was like in middle school in 99. And she was really popular. Yeah, there are two fellas, one with a beard, one without a beard. Let's do beardless first. You. Where were you?
I was in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, okay.
My family sent me book one and book two. So
yes. I can't speak to who the up-and-coming chefs are because I don't run in restaurant circles. Chefs, by and large, scare me. I've been screamed at in a lot of languages by guys in white jackets, which is why the fact that there's one sitting up here is kind of... That's all right. He's a student. I can kick his ass. It's not a problem. But one of the trends that I'm really interested in is... moving back to antiquity. I think we're going to see more and more cuisine coming out of like the Renaissance age and ancient Rome. I think we're going to see going back because now that chefs have kind of looked forward and we've gone into molecular gastronomy, I think we're going to go back to stuffing peacocks with dormice and stuff like that. No, I'm dead serious. I actually started talking about this about 6 months ago, and just this past week there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about chefs who are doing tasting menus based on Renaissance or pre-Renaissance food. All the way back to Apicius from the 5th century Rome. So I think that old food is gonna come back. And I'm actually kind of glad for that because I think we sometimes need to learn and look at where we've come from in order to figure out where we're going again. And it's a good time for that, I think. All right, the guy with the beard.
So what would you say was
The secret ingredient on an Iron Chef battle that has intrigued me the most is actually an episode that has not come on yet. It'll be on at the beginning of next year, and it's Battle Yak. And the chairman managed to land us a whole yak. And that's awesome. Like, one yak rack, please. Yes, young man, speak. Stand, good. How did I first learn to cook? I became a cook in college. I got really into food in college because I could not get dates. I had the most pathetic social life ever. I mean, I was a loser. I was a loser with the ladies. But I found that girls, they would always say no to being asked out if you offered to cook for them, would be intrigued. This was the 80s. That was still risque. And so I went to the university library, and I got food books and magazines, and I learned how to make dishes, which was hard because I was on a very tight budget. I worked like three jobs. And so I had to learn how to do things very, very cheaply. But it gave me a shot. It didn't really work out real well. I'll say that, like so many other parts of my social life at the time, I ended up cooking by myself. And we'll stop there. All right, hold on. There was a lady with glasses that had her hand up before everybody. No, not you. I'll get to you in a second. The one in the... There you go. The one in the pink, kind of. Plum. When I was doing Feasting on Asphalt, what was my favorite part of the country to ride in? Favorite kind of part of the country to ride or eat? Riding, you know what? It's tough to beat the Appalachians for riding. If you're a motorcyclist, it's very tough to beat the mountains of North Carolina and Tennessee for riding. I don't much care for riding in the state of Nevada. I got my reasons for that. Some of them still really hurt when the weather changes. For food, I would probably have to say the Southwest, because I got to spend some time with some Native Americans on the reservations cooking and eating their food, and that was really very meaningful because they have extremely spiritual food ways, which is something we kind of forget in America, where we can have everything all the time and tend to lose the spiritual part of food. Why do they call that a hall pass? Because when I was in school, a hall pass, all you got to do was go to the bathroom. Maybe cop a cigarette, but that was about it. All right, the other lady with the glasses, that's you, ma'am. Go ahead. Come to Denver. It'll be fun. So, you had a question, madam. Thank you. I'm trying. For a guy who's almost 50, yeah. You're built for comfort. Well, two things. I gave up some stuff forever. Diet sodas. I gave up diet sodas. I used to be very addicted to diet sodas, which I believe are diabolical. Now that I've dealt with my diet and I've lost some weight, I do believe that there's almost nothing worse to put in your body than... I mean, eating a pack of cigarettes would be better than drinking diet sodas, because diet sodas condition your brain to believe you need this real high level of sweet. And then it's like you drink five Diet Cokes and the next day you can eat a pound of peanut M&Ms and you feel fine. Well, you shouldn't feel fine after eating a pound bag of peanut M&Ms. You should puke rainbow until... So I quit those, and I did change my diet a lot. I mean, I concentrate my diet now more on stuff that I need to have rather than things I shouldn't have. And there's some other things that I don't ever eat anymore. I do not drink milk at all, because milk made me do evil things. Milk said, come on. Let's get some Girl Scout cookies. You know, it'd be like, and then once you open the box of Thin Mints, once you breach a tube, I mean, that box only has two servings in it. You know, now it's like, no, I'm not going to eat the Girl Scout cookies. And then milk would say, come on, you scared. So milk was not my friend. You know, milk cookies, milk cake, milk pie. Milk bad things. So I said, milk I break with thee, and I'm not going to drink you anymore. And it made a big difference, because you don't really want Girl Scout cookies if you can't have milk. They're just not that good anymore. So I don't do that. And I work out a lot. The best thing, at least for a man, I can't speak to the, because I don't understand anything about women at all, is that when you're a man, your best friend is muscle, because muscle eats. And so once I lost, 50 pounds, I then turned around to work to try to put on 15 pounds of muscle, which changed my metabolism a lot. So hopefully when I do cross 50, which is not that far away, hopefully I'll be able to, you know, maintain something good. You.
I've been watching your show for 8 years.
8 years.
And I watch with all my friends.
Thank you. You just watch Good Eats and cook.
Seven course meals based on your recipes.
Seven courses.
Yes, sir.
Better watch the old, yeah.
What I was going to ask, since you just said that Good Eats is coming in.
Yes, it is. I've put it out to pasture.
What are your plans? Are you looking more like travel logs? Like
No. I'm not going to do any. I don't think I'm going to do any travel log. Although, if I was able to do more Feasting on Asphalt, I would. But I'm not so sure Food Network will let me, because they got Guy Fieri doing that whole diners, drive-ins, and dives thing. So, come on. Be nice. It's my job to be a butthead. I'm working on several exciting new projects. I'm going to start, I'm doing a series starting next year of video-enhanced ebooks. I'm moving into e-publishing. So my whole kind of filmmaking and writing efforts are going to go into that. I'm also going to be working on a mini-series for Food Network called Foods That Change the World, which is going to be kind of an anthropological investigation of specific foods that changed everything for mankind. Including, of course, nutmeg. Which, which I always have with me. And I am going to be in all of the Food Network stars next year, and there'll be something else that I'm not going to talk about yet, but you'll like it a lot. You, sir. You. 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 Jeez, pay attention. What keeps me going back to cooking? You know, to me, food is a universal subject. It's one of the only things we all have in common with each other. We all eat or we die. And it connects us to each other. It connects us to history. It connects us to the planet. It's the connective tissue of life. For me, as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, it's infinitely interesting. It's like food is to me what the mob is to Martin Scorsese. It's constantly interesting, you know? And so, you know, he makes movies about the mafia, and I make movies about food, only they're short and don't have as big a budget or stars. So to me, it never runs out. I am going to be doing in the next year or so some science-related but not food-related TV projects. So just so you know. But food never wears out for me. There's always an interesting story there. Yes, the young man. How do I come up with the ideas for Good Eats? About 2 weeks before I start writing the scripts, I go off my medication. That's not a very good answer. Research. Lots and lots and lots and lots of research. And the stories always come out of the research. They just do. If you do enough research and you let the storylines come, they will. Even all the crazy characters and sock puppets and giant squids and all of that kind of stuff. In the end, always. You got your excellent young man. You got your yeast puppet. I see that. Does yours burp or fart? Or a little bit of both? You know, have you seen the kit in the book, right? Yeah. You've got your entire... We tried to put the actual sock in the book. We went through all this different technology to, like, squeeze them down and suck the air. And then we finally thought, you know what? If somebody can't afford a sock, they can't afford a book. So everybody's got a sock, right? I mean, most everybody has a sock, so I think that's okay. The lady in the back, two rows... Yes, ma'am, you. Oh, not you. I'll get to you in a second. Her. Oh, you're speaking for the little one. Okay, go ahead. She's shy. Go ahead. She can hide behind you. That's fine. Just keep going. My favorite dessert to prepare. Not eat, but prepare. I like making pies. I'm a great maker of pies. And I would say the Good Eats apple pie would be probably my favorite dessert to make. I like that pie a lot. And I make a lot of ice cream. In summertime, my daughter and I always keep around liquid nitrogen so we can turn anything into ice cream. And if we don't have anything to make ice cream out of, we soak crackers, saltine crackers, in liquid nitrogen and feed them to the dogs. Because then they shoot this steam out of their mouths like dragons. And it's a lot of fun. The other lady that was in front of you that got up thinking that it was her when it actually wasn't. You, yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
You say a lot on Iron Chef that you don't get to taste anything.
I do not eat the food on Iron Chef. I do not get any of the food on Iron Chef whatsoever. No. It's my rule. Because back when the series first started, we did 4 episodes of a show called Battle of the Masters, which was, I don't know, 8 years ago or something. And it was it brought together some of who were going to become the American Iron Chefs with some of the original Japanese Iron Chefs. And Wolfgang Puck was there, and Morimoto, and Bobby Flay was there. But also one of the first Japanese Iron Chefs, who was Chef Sakai, who was very, very, very popular in the original series. Well, during that series, I ate some of everything. Because, I mean, who wouldn't want to, right? But Chef Sakai one day used an ingredient unbeknownst to me that I have a very, very, very bad intolerance to. And I ate it. I can't eat oysters. I could up until the time I turned 30, and then I couldn't eat them anymore. And he used oyster broth and something without telling anybody, and I ate some of it. And within 24 hours, was in the hospital. So I decided then and there, no more Iron Chef food for me. That's it. I need my job. I need my job worse. Sir, you in the back. No, it wasn't salmon ice cream. It was trout ice cream. And that tasted like ass. That's the other reason I don't eat that stuff. Because never in my life have I had to concentrate my entire will on making my throat muscles swallow. I mean, it was a real battle. There's nothing about a trout that should go into an ice cream machine. No part of it should go into an ice cream machine. Yes.
I'm the trainer for a franchise at Spice Shops.
Okay.
And I use...
You work at Spice Shops. Good.
Okay. And I use you a lot as an example.
A good example or a bad example? I'm a good example. Okay, good.
But now that I finally get to meet you, what's your favorite spice?
My favorite spice in the world is cumin. There's something about cumin that just rocks my boat. I also like sumac a great deal. Do you have a least favorite spice?
Anything licorice
flavor. I hate cardamom.
Oh.
Cardamom. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to break your heart. It's a good thing I'm not your hall pass. Yes, ma'am. Hi. The most valuable lesson I took away from culinary school, you don't really have to go to culinary school. and that's a valuable lesson. It's just, it's a little too late to use it, you know, when the time comes. Well, lady, why are you holding a monkey?
He wants to know how this whole sock thing got started.
What about that's not a sock, that's a monkey. Is it a monkey made out of a sock? I'm deeply afraid of monkeys, just so you know. Monkeys spook me out. It's like they want to come live in your house and stuff, and then they want to rip your face off. Do you have a question, or do you just want to frighten me with your monkey? How did the sock thing get started? I'm cheap. I was like, I need some yeasts. Well, here's a sock. Done. Part of the Good Eats style is cheap. You know, you can see all the wires in the duct tape, you know. I mean, if you go back and look at scenes with the giant squid, its flippers are made out of bath mats. Because they got suction cups on them. It makes sense. And the paint, if it rained, we were doomed because all the paint just comes off if it rains. Yes, sir. Stand up. Thank you. That's okay. I knew what you were talking about. When I got hurt, what were my thoughts? Ah! That was pretty much the only thought I had. Besides, oh, please, God, let me breathe. Please don't let the motorcycle actually land on top of me. Please don't let me die. And then a lot of pain. Lots of pain. If you ever break your collarbone in the future, don't break it so that it's like this. Just a word of warning. You don't want to do that. Especially if you've got 6 more days of shooting. You don't want to do that. You. Yes, stand up.
What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, what did I want to be when I grew up? I don't really remember a time when I didn't want to be a filmmaker, when I didn't want to make movies. I just got sidetracked and found that I like making shows about food better. But I always wanted to be a movie director. You know, yell at people, and I kind of got that anyway. Because chefs are a lot like that. You, sir.
Yes. By the way, I myself was in a motorcycle accident a number of years ago, but I broke bones in my feet and my collarbone.
You know what I'm talking about.
Huh?
It hurts.
Well, it took a while for it to start hurting.
Really?
Yes.
How long?
About like 10 seconds.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have enough time to know, oh, crap, this is going to hurt. And then you're like, oh, well, maybe it's not going to be so. Ah! Yeah. So you have a question, sir.
Yes, the question is about the science content of Good Beats. What was your, and did you have a much, you mentioned you want to be a movie director. When did the inspiration for science?
When did the science get important?
Important. What are your future, and I guess, interests? Was Bill Nye an influence for you?
Bill Nye was not really an influence for me because we missed generations a little bit. I'm older than him, I think. So odds are I didn't watch him growing up because he would have been little Bill Nye. So, you know, like my influences were more like Mr. Wizard, which you probably don't even remember. But I was a horrible science student. In high school, I flunked chemistry. I flunked biology. I barely made it out of physics. I, horrible bad student. And then when I got to college, I mean, it took me 7 years to get just a regular degree. Of course, I got kicked out of two colleges, but before I finally found one that would let me go. I ended up at UGA. I did graduate from UGA. But there were other schools before that who invited me to leave. And there may have been academic reasons for that. Science didn't matter any to me until I became a cook. And then it was like, oh, you mean I needed that? So then I had to go back and learn it all, which is why it took me so long.
As an engineering person, I'm very fascinated about the science stuff that you include in Good Eats.
There's a lot of science in Good Eats because cooking is science.
That's one of my favorite parts of it.
Well, I'm glad you like that. And I do have science-oriented projects coming up, but I'm self-trained. I mean, I got my science knowledge the old-fashioned way, studying. Michael Faraday did the exact same thing. He almost blew himself up a few times, too. Way in the back in the corner. We'll take like three more questions, and we'll sign stuff. Go ahead, sir.
When you're not cooking on your show, who gets the food?
You know, there's not a whole lot of food on, you know, on Good Eats. We don't waste much food because we don't cook much food. There's usually one or two plates of food, and the crew eats it. And any leftover ingredients that we have, either we have deals with both a homeless shelter and a food bank. So, excuse me, depending on how perishable it is, it goes to one place or the other. We don't waste anything at all. Yes, sir. You.
All right. I'm going to say this on behalf of everybody here. Good Eats obviously has a lot of fans. There's nothing else like on TV. In your heart of hearts, when you get a free bet.
When my fans rise up like the army they are. March to Food Network and demand it. I'm giving it a rest. I'm giving it a rest. We'll see how the rest goes, and we'll see if the country completely unravels. But yeah, I will say this. One of the nice things is that I've got a very long-standing retrospective because Cooking Channel, the new digital side of Food Network, is going to be airing Good Eats in prime time in chronological order the entire 13 years in order. So it's not going away. It's not going away anytime soon. And I may end up doing something you actually like better. Yes, sir.
All right. I love the cherry Kool-Aid pickles. One of my favorites.
Cool Lickles.
Yes.
I like them too.
So, since you're the American UGO authority, is there going to be a Challenger Brown in the future on American Iron Chef?
Dude, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Say that again. I'm the American Dr. Hattori. Okay, I got that part.
He was a challenger twice.
He was a challenger twice. That's true.
Will you be a challenger?
I will not ever be a challenger on Iron Chef America. And the reason for that is I do not ever want anybody to get a shot at my job. I have cultivated an approach to that job that makes it look very difficult. And it looks, on the surface, as though I'm the only guy who can do it. That's critical. If I go down there on the floor, who's going to step up? They might do a good job. And there goes all my negotiating leverage. Because right now, everybody thinks, whoa, nobody else can do that. You know, and some freaking sock monkey comes up and does it, and I'm gonna be in a lot of trouble. All right, last question, you, madam. Do they really have an hour to plan and create? Okay. All right, here's the skinny. I got it. Sit down. It's not like I haven't heard this one before, okay? Here's the deal. On Iron Chef America, as was the case with the original Japanese series, about a week before the competition, the chefs are given a list of possibilities. And I think it's either 8 or 10. I can't remember how many it is. And then sometimes at the last minute, they change it up. so that it's not even any of those things. But the reason that you don't see shock and awe and fear is because no matter what is under that altar, somebody has got to grab it fast, and somebody's got to go start some stocks. You know, if you're cooking with Bobby Flay, somebody better go make some chili oil and some herb oil right freaking away. So there's all this action happening. You know, somebody's going to cut up an onion. 9 times out of 10, somebody's going to cut up an onion, regardless of what's under there. So right when the LA cuisine comes, there's this huge flurry of action as people grab for stuff and run. And then about 2 minutes in, everybody stops and goes, okay, what the hell are we going to do? But here's the thing. It's an hour battle, and the clock has never stopped for anything for any reason. It's an hour TV show. But the actual content of the show is only about 41 minutes because the rest is commercials. So we cut out that part because nobody wants to watch a bunch of people in white coats standing around going, so we just cut that out. Thank you for coming, everybody. I just want to say that I'm going to stay and absolutely positively sign for everybody. So don't feel that I'm going to walk away. I know, raffle. I'll go to it. Thanks for coming.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.